Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton, and welcome to another show where I am joined by Teddy and Paul McAllister, and we're going to get through a lot tonight. We are going to start with a Remember the Name segment on Ramiro Funes Mori, followed by a debate around the rumoured possibility of us signing the veteran centre-back Thiago Silva, a name which has been very heavily linked recently. Then we've got our middle bit where we are going to have a random off-topic discussion where tonight we're actually going to have a very interesting discussion regarding wrestling walkout music, and we're going to just have a look into what sort of tunes some of our first team squad might walk out to in that situation. Certainly Teddy and Paul will be in their element there. We'll finish off then by joining Max Carlisle and Tom Clark for a match preview ahead of our return to the Premier League action against none other than those lovables from across the park. So that should be a very interesting match preview to tune in for. And then Paul and Teddy will be back at the end for the quiz to round it off. As you know, the segments are separate videos on YouTube, so I'll introduce the respective segments as we move through the podcast, and we'll crack on and get on to our first topic regarding Ramiro Funes Mori, the man with the barbecue, Ramiro Funes Mori. And for that, I'm joined by Terry and Paul McAllister. We'll start at the beginning, lads. You know, when he first arrived, it was on deadline day in 2015, wasn't it? And it was just, I think we were all... We knew we needed a left-footed centre-back after this stand left, but we're expecting it to be Ramiro Funes Mori.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I'd never heard of him at all. I don't keep up with South American football at all, really, so I had no idea who this player was, but on paper he sounded quite good because he was an established Argentina international. And wasn't his last game for River Plate, like, their equivalent to the Champions League final, whatever the
final.
Yeah, he scored the winner in that game, didn't he? So he was like this cult hero all over Buenos Aires or whatever River Plate are based. So yeah. Basically, he was coming in with this sort of big reputation, but also a bit of a mystery because unless you watch South American football regularly, I had no idea who he was, but as I mentioned, when you see all these things on paper, he's loved by Argentina fans, he's an Argentine international, he's good for a goal, he looks big and strong, I thought, right, we'll have a bit of this. I think this could be just what Everton need, the sort of tough, old-fashioned centre-half that we can all get behind. So when he came in, I was more than happy to give him a chance, and when the likes of Tim Vickery and all these other pundits were all writing him off and slagging him, I was one of the ones saying, leave him alone, you don't know what you're talking about, give him a chance. But in the end, it just didn't work out for various reasons, did it? So,
no, and I think we have to go back to that deadline day where the rumour was that we could have bought Virgil van Dijk and bought Funes Mori instead. I think that's only a bit of a blot on the track record, if ever there was one.
What happened with van Dijk? He was at Celtic, wasn't he? And I don't know how serious the talks ever were between us and Van Dijk. I mean, did we ever actually bid for him? Or did we actually go to Celtic and open up any dialogue? Because it's easy for Everton to get linked with a player. We get linked with everyone. But whether there was actually any, you know, real efforts to try and sound Van Dijk out, I don't know. Because if it comes out that Everton were never really in for Van Dijk in the first place, then I think fans could maybe stomach it a bit better. But the narrative over the last few years seems to be that we went for Van Dijk, we were told to pay a certain amount, and Martinez, basically just to save a few million, went and got this Argentina lad instead. So, do you or Terry know at all? Were we ever serious about going for Van Dijk? Or?
I'm not. Apparently, what I heard, I mean, was that we were offered Van Dijk by his agent, because you've got to remember, Van Dijk wasn't then the Van Dijk he is now. This is pre Southampton. I heard that the agent, Van Dijk's agent, offered him to Everton, and Everton passed on him for financial reasons because they could get Funes Mori for a shade cheaper. They were obviously looking for that left-sided centre-back, you know, mould, and I think they just saw Funes Mori. You've got to remember as well, it's funny to think about now, but we were all very high on Martinez at the time.
I wasn't.
Well, no, it was after that.
By this point, we'd gone out to Dinamo Kiev, so I'd kind of gone off him by this point a bit.
No, this was after the second season where I was not in love with Martinez at all, but that's just me.
Well, all right. Well, put it this way. We were... Martinez had full control of transfers, didn't he? And he was very much into football and, you know, footballers, you know, who were good on the ball. And I think the perception at the time was, which is hilarious now, that Van Dijk wasn't as good on the ball as Funes Mori, and he wanted like some a sort of left-sided John Stones to go alongside him. And yeah, basically, you know, I remember when we got Mori, Funes Mori, I actually thought he looked the part. I thought physically he's got it. He was big, strong. He's, you know, he's not lightning quick, but he's certainly not, you know, Alcaraz or Jagielka slow. But he did have decent ability on the ball, and he had good aggression. A little bit too much in some instances, but he had good aggression of attacking the ball on corners. He, you know, defensively and you know, offensively. And it seemed like, you know, a good move at the time. You know, nobody's got like crystal ball and knew that, you know, passing on Van Dijk, letting him go to Southampton would have been a big mistake. I mean, to be honest, if we'd have got Van Dijk, he'd have ended up in City a few years later anyway, because, you know, he wouldn't have sold him to Liverpool, and City were looking at him at that same time. So he'd be at City now, and that timeline's probably a lot more pleasant to live in than the one we're in now. But Funes Mori, he was a Premier League defender. He had everything, all the attributes, but he was a typical Martinez buy. He was a lot more. As is apt for Funes Mori, he had a lot more sizzle than he had steak. You know, he had too many mistakes in him. He had too many, you know, moments of madness, like the stupid sending off in the derby, and then he grabs the badge, and you're like, "Oh, mate, I know you think that's going over quite well, but you've just, you know, done us in a derby, which we struggle in anyway." I think ability wise he was good, but mentality wise he was off his head, wasn't he?
He was off his rocker, absolutely. I think that was a good way of putting it. I mean, the worst thing for me about the derby sending off wasn't that he got sent off in the derby, because we were getting our arses handed to us anyway at that stage of that game. But it was the fact that he got himself suspended for the semi-final when we were short on centre-backs. You know, we were struggling for personnel at the back, and he went and got himself suspended when we needed him. And, you know, that could have cost us a place in the cup final, what he'd done there.
We have to play Jagielka, and didn't Besic have to play at right back or something?
Besic was at right back because he played Oviedo at right back in that derby, and that went disastrously. So he thought, let's at least try a right footed player at right back.
I know, it just it spoke volumes for the lack of discipline in the Martinez, you know, sort of camp. And he, you know, it wasn't much later that he did lose his job. But I don't know. I look back on Funes Mori and like, you know, I think he's remembered, you know, history is kinder to him in light of what we've done since he's left. Because if we'd have moved on to bigger and better, you know, players and things, and done really good business since he was sold, I think people would look on him a lot, you know, less favourably. But now you think, well, was he really worse than
Ashley Williams?
Yeah, was he worse than Ashley Williams? You know what I mean? We brought him in
after we got rid of Alcaraz as well, so that must put him up on a bit of a pedestal as well.
You've had some terrible players, mate. But I don't think Barry was one of them. Like I loved, as much as he loved his barbecues, he loved the knee slides as well, and I like that. I like players who slide on the knees when they score. It's proper highlight reel stuff, isn't it?
To be fair, that was one of the best like highlights of that season as well, was the goal he scored against Man City, which in the semi-final, which really, if we weren't as off by Sterling and the referee and whatnot, we might have got into a final with that, you know. That season was full of sliding doors moments that just went against us.
Our entire history is full of them.
wait, I was going to say, that's symbolic of Everton really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the thing that I knew about Funes Mori is as well, I remember when he came in, I touched on it before, there was a lot of pundits who were like saying he was going to fail. Tim Vickery was the main one saying, he doesn't have the pace and he doesn't have the physicality for the English Premier League. Now, because Funes Mori came in and ultimately wasn't successful, a lot of people were saying, oh, well, they've been vindicated, all those pundits told us he wasn't great. But if you look back at it, Funes Mori in his first 6 months was actually really good. Yeah, he was mostly at the back with John Stones, wasn't he? Because Jagielka was injured a lot of that season, kind of in and out. So Funes Mori was like the main centre half of that campaign. Stones and Jagielka kind of alternated, didn't he? But I remember Tim Vickery saying things like, he hasn't got the pace, he hasn't got the physicality, he's going to get bullied in the Premier League.
I thought he handled himself quite well in that respect. I didn't think that was his issue.
Exactly, that was what I was going to come to. That was not his problem at all. He could absolutely hold his own in the Premier League. He just didn't have the concentration and he didn't have the discipline. So that was a case of people like Tim Vickery trying to be clever before the evidence was in. So they weren't vindicated at all. Funes Mori is a decent level defender and he'd probably be an asset to a lot of clubs in the Premier League who were down the bottom. But
his only issue was that he was a bit erratic.
He was a lunatic. He has three or four big mistakes in him that are going to cost you points every season. He's going to do something stupid, like get himself sent off, or he's going to give away a goal, or he's going to score an own goal, something mad. He was too inconsistent and we just couldn't rely on him. And as Terry said, history's been kinder to him. A lot of people seem to think remember him as being better than what he actually was now. Because other than that first 6 months, I just wasn't overly impressed with him. I mean, after the Derby fiasco, he wasn't one of my favourite players anyway. But for me, he never really never found his rhythm, never found his feet type thing. He never had like a long stretch of games other than that first 6 months where I felt, yeah, this lad's all right. We can build around this lad, because when him and Stones were together for the second half of the campaign, we were absolutely awful. We were shipping goals. I don't think they kept a clean sheet.
It was terrible. That was the end. That was when Martinez was really losing his marbles, wasn't it?
For all the praise Stones was getting at the time, oh, he's this majestic ball carrying centre.
I thought he was atrocious that season.
Yeah, he was. They were an atrocious pairing together, but neither one of them seemed to be getting any pelters. Everyone seemed to be just blaming Martinez for the reason the defence was crap. Whereas they weren't pointing things at the two centre-halves who were an absolute appalling pair together and had too many lunatic moments in them, whereas Stones is doing Cruyff turns in the box.
Telling the fans to calm down when he's like doing a Cruyff turn on his own goal line.
On his own goal line. Yeah, this is a video about Funes Mori, though. We'll talk about Stones another day. But Funes Mori, where did he go? He went to Villarreal, didn't he, after we got rid of him? Yeah. I think, was it Allardyce who sold him?
It was Marco Silva sold him.
Yeah. I remember he got injured, didn't he, in Koeman's first season. Yeah. And he was gone the majority of that second season, the 2017-18 mess of a season. He came back towards the end, didn't he? And I think Allardyce gave him a little look and decided he wasn't for him. And then, obviously, he's gone in the summer, hasn't he, when Silva's gone in. But my point is, he's gone to Villarreal and I haven't kept up with him, to be honest. Has anyone kept an eye on him at Villarreal? Has he done anything over there? Or
not that I know of. I haven't seen him pull up any cheese or anything, if that's what you mean.
I can tell you. I'll tell you one thing, though. His lasting legacy for me at Everton will be the greatest tweet in all of football Twitter. Was him when we were signing him, John Merrow. Everyone was, kicking off over Tim Vickery, slating him when they're this new player Everton we're going to sign. And John Merrow tweets, Tim Vickery is as John. Sorry, Tim Vickery is John Vickery.
Go on, Paul.
It makes me laugh so much.
Tim Vickery is a failed school teacher who went to Brazil for more sex opportunities. He is not the oracle when it comes to South American footballers.
Fantastic. That is fantastic.
Not even relevant to the conversation of him as a player. I just always remember that tweet. It's just a school teacher who moved to Brazil for greater sex opportunities. He is not the oracle on South American footballers.
The belt of that, isn't it?
A lot of people were like, oh, well, Tim Vickery's been vindicated. He told us he was going to be not good enough, and look how right he was. The reasoning he made for why Funes Mori wouldn't cut it at Everton is not why he didn't cut it. He said he'd be too weak. He didn't have the pace. He's not good on the ball. That was not Funes Mori's problem. His problem was he just couldn't concentrate. Yeah, it was all in his head. Funes Mori would be great, I think, in somewhere like the Championship. He'd be levels above that because it is literally, or somewhere like Italy, where all you've got to do is just sit in your own box and just head the ball clear. Be great in a league like that.
Yeah, it's just
it wasn't his physicality, it was his brain, wasn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, so we pointed Tim Vickery was, and the people who were slagging Funes Mori before he'd even played for us were trying to be clever and so he could have the credit afterwards. So it's like, no, you haven't been vindicated. Funes Mori did well in that first 6 months, and ultimately the reason he didn't work out was because we couldn't rely on him in big moments, not because he can't carry the ball or because he's a wimp.
Definitely. I think it's worth remembering anyone who tries to injure a player in the derby and then gets a red card and then like kisses the badge after it. I think they've got to be missing a couple of brain cells, haven't they?
Yeah. I would finish with him for that. To be honest, if anyone thinks that was good, or I've seen people use that as like Twitter profile pictures and things like that, that sums up why we don't win derbies and why we don't go anywhere in cup competitions, because when Everton players and Everton supporters think it's great when you kick people instead of actually trying hard to win the game. I don't know what you're watching the sport for. Go watch rugby if you want to watch a bunch of people bashing each other about. Funes Mori, after that, as you said, James, it wasn't just the fact that he got himself sent off in a derby because the game had gone. He was unavailable for the most important game of the season, and it probably lost us the game because
I think it did.
Yeah. I think if Funes Mori plays in that game, there's a very, very strong chance we'd have beaten United, because I was at Wembley that day. United were absolutely terrible. They were terrible. They were there for the taking. The only reason we didn't win is because we were just missing too many crucial players, and because Lukaku wants to miss about our 10 sitters as well. Let's not forget that. But Funes Mori, all this, oh, he has barbecues, he does all these knee slides, he kisses the badge after he kicks Liverpool players. No, bore off with that. At the end of the day, he was an absolute idiot of a player. I don't doubt the fact that he went on the pitch and tried hard, but he wasn't cut out for a team as big as Everton, because at a team as big as Everton, you can't behave like that and expect everyone to love you. And if they do love you, then there's something up with
them. I mean, to be fair, he played for arguably one of the biggest teams in South America before he came to Everton. So, you know, he has played for very big clubs.
In Argentina, they're not happy unless
you are kicking players.
Yeah, their supporters go to football games and knife each other. Do you know what I mean? It was just a cultural thing at the end of the day. And he's still loved by Argentina, back in Argentina to this day. And he probably could go back to River Plate anytime he feels like and get a hero's welcome, which is probably what he's going to end up doing. But yeah. Funes Mori, I don't hate him. There's a lot of players I've got no time for who've come through the club the last couple of years, and he's one of them, to be honest. It's like, whatever. You came, you had a goal, you didn't invest, go away.
There you go. That's probably a good way for us to finish then, isn't it? That's the end of the Funes Mori throwback. Let's just say that was a bit of a mixed review there, wasn't it?
He's one of those players, isn't he? Like he had a very mixed Everton career. There was a lot of, I know a lot of people who rated him and thought that he deserved longer, but it's one of them, isn't it?
It's just one of them. I think literally every Everton debate I ever have ends with, it's just one of them, isn't it? But there you have it, guys. That's the end of the Funes Mori throwback, if you like. Let us know your memories of Funes Mori and what you made of his contribution to Everton during his 3-year spell that he had here. We're going to be deciding whether or not Everton should sign Thiago Silva on a free transfer this summer. Obviously, we want a new centre-back this summer, and many names have been linked a few of which we've already discussed on this show up to this point. But Thiago Silva's certainly an interesting one in the respect that he's a, let's say he's the wrong size of 30, but that's an understatement. It's the turn of Thiago Silva to stand before the jury now, and by the jury I mean Paul and Teddy, who joined me for this debate. We'll start with you on this one, Paul. Two summers ago, we brought in Marcel Brands, who was obviously very keen on bringing in the younger players and replenishing an aging squad. Granted, he has brought the average age down considerably since he's come in, but are you surprised that we're going after someone who's going to be 36 in September?
Well, just what you said a minute ago, he's the wrong side of 30. He's actually closer to 40 than he is 30.
He's closer to 40 than 30, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's a very high-profile name, isn't he? He's the type of signing where people will kind of sit up and take notice if he comes to Everton, but are they going to sit up and take notice going, wow, I can't believe they've signed him, he's great, or are they going to sit up and go, what are they doing signing that old man? It makes me uneasy, to be honest, because we've done this a lot over the last few years. We've signed these sorts of over-the-hill big names, hoping that they'll come in and give some experience teach the younger players something. And it just never works. We've seen it with Etu. We had Rooney. We've got Delph now, who's probably the worst one of the lot.
Delph's a disaster.
Ashley Williams as well. It sounds good on paper.
It feels like we've done it with Gareth Barry, and I feel like ever since we've been trying to replicate that.
Yeah, that he's probably the only example of us doing this that actually turned out well. And even then, the only reason he was successful is because people didn't expect anything of him. The expectations were so low when he came in. But Thiago Silva, he's been a Paris Saint-Germain, for about 5-6 years?
8 years, 2012, he said.
8 years. 8 years. The French league's not great. We know it isn't. So how long has it been since Thiago Silva was in like a really hard, tough league where you've got to be on it every single game where you're going to get found out?
The best league he's played in is Serie A with AC Milan, and he did win a league title. But
yeah, how long ago was that?
2011. 2011.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were winning, we won a derby that season. That's how long ago it was.
Bloody hell. I mean, obviously, Ancelotti must like him. He's got a relationship with Ancelotti, but Ancelotti's never struck me as the type of manager who, gives jobs to his mates. Do you know what I mean?
No.
A lot of managers do. They bring in allies, basically. They bring in players who'll snitch for them. Let's be blunt. That's the reason Alcaraz got a job under Martinez. That's the reason Stekelenburg got a job under
Koeman,
isn't it? And that's the reason Sammy Lee got a coaching job under Allardyce. They just want mates. They want allies around them. And Ancelotti's never really struck me as that type, has he? I mean, he's got his son there, but his son's only a very recent addition, isn't he? So, to his backroom staff. So, if Ancelotti is dead set on having him, then Ancelotti's got enough credit in the bank that I'd be willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. But we've seen this so many times. I just don't see it working. I really don't. He's too old.
That's the big question. That's actually what I was going to ask next. It's come out today that he reportedly wants $180,000 a week. And that is just not financially viable.
Yeah, we're up to our eyes in FFP anyway, if reports are to be believed.
Plus coronavirus has affected everybody to an extent as well. How can we possibly be considering paying anybody that kind of money? Not to mention somebody who's 35 going on 36.
And hasn't played in a really fast, hard league for a long time as well. Probably on his... This is going to be his last contract, isn't it? So who knows what his ambition is.
Does he even have any at this stage?
Would he come just to be what I said, just to be Ancelotti's eyes and ears in the changing room? So I don't think it will happen. I'd be very shocked if it did. I'd like to think the club will have learned their lesson. I mean, they've got to be fuming at Delph, haven't they? Because Delph was one of those signings that people talk themselves into thinking it might be good, and it's been a disaster. So if we do this, then I just think the club, Brands especially, who's in charge of these transfers, is not learning anything. So We'll have to wait and see. I don't want to see it.
It is concerning, Terry. I think you as well. Do you think we should be wasting this kind of money on veterans? It hasn't worked out before, so why would it work out this time? And also, is Thiago Silva really what we need? I don't know if it's what we need at centre back either. We've got enough slow defenders as it is.
It's very Bolton in 2004, isn't it? Player with a massive name who's pretty much finished his top level career. So we'll get him in because they're going for free and we can pay decent wages. I mean, if it is true, and that's a big if, I don't think that it's actually that out of the Marcel Brand's wheelhouse as people think. Like, he's done it at PSV, bringing in a couple of experienced players to sort of supplement the young squad on the whole that he builds. He's done it already once here with Fabian Delph. Now, Fabian Delph. But you say that, but it might be behind closed doors. We don't know what it's like in the dressing room. For all we know, the young players all love Delph. Now, we don't like him because of the things he's said and done while he's been here. But that's not to say that we know what goes on in the dressing room. So the ones that have come before Brands, I don't think we can really judge him on them because, we did bring in Rooney, Eto'o. Go further back, you've got Ginola and Gascoigne and all that. And I would like the club to get away from doing these type of deals. I am not for them at all because we haven't got a history of them working apart from really Gareth Barry. And you could sort of argue Rooney did, even though I don't think so, other people would. But for me, the overriding thing of this, the elephant in the room is COVID-19. If this is true and we've moved on to Thiago Silva as the centre-back target from Gabriel, it shows they weren't joking when it came to when it came out that we were looking at loans and free transfers rather than big signings. It shows that
I get that, but what about the wages? Like, we can't, if we are trying to cut back a bit, we can't be paying wages like that to anybody, let alone a veteran.
We won't give him that. There's no way. I think that's paper talk, those wages. No one in world football will give him that, especially now, because how can you make players take wage deferrals and then give a new player who's 35, 36 a contract which makes him the top earner? They'd all go berserk. I don't think there's even a 1% truth in the suggestion that we'd offer him. Those levels of wages. I think if he comes in, he would have to come in within our wage structure, and I don't think anyone else would beat it, because no one else has got money either. So I think that's a non-starter, those big wages. I think he'd be under 100. What it is after that, I don't know.
Do you think we'll get him?
No. I don't think it's a good move, and I think the people in charge of our transfers are too intelligent and too experienced to make the move.
From what's happened already, Everton, I think.
Yeah, because how many players come to the Premier League and struggle with the pace and the physicality, and most of them aren't 35, 36. So I don't think it's true. I don't think it's... I think we may have sounded them out because we're exploring options, but I wouldn't imagine it's gone any further than that. If we had, say we were 3 years down the line, or we'd done our business really well up until this point, if we had a really young, really well set up, really, established squad, and we just needed one player maybe to complement that, or, we were lacking a little bit of leadership and that was the only issue, then I could see it. Maybe, okay, we'll bring Thiago Silva in, but you've already got Gabriel, you've already got Holgate, and you've got to say we had Tadebo as well, and we had lots of young players everywhere. Then I could see them putting in a Thiago Silva to sort of go in that mix, but we're not at that stage of our build at the minute. We're well earlier in the process than that, and 35-year-old veterans. I don't think it's going to happen. If we do get him, I understand why. I think it'll be down to financial reasons. I think it won't be a lack of ambition or a lack of, you know, It'll be more being creative financially than it will be because, you know, he was the proper target. We all know Gabriel was the proper target. I hope it's not true. Fantastic player, but I just don't see it being a good move for the club, just from past experience of similar deals, regardless of how good the players were. But if it does happen, I definitely understand why.
I definitely wouldn't even try and understand. I don't think it's a good move, to be honest. I don't think we should be going in for players who have passed the prime and have also won a lot, so don't really have a lot of hunger as well. I think it's just, I understand the financial side of things, but surely we can
go ahead, Paul. And unproven in this type of league as well.
Very true, yeah, as well. There's no Premiership experience there. I'd actually rather get a player who's not as good but has more potential to grow than splash our wages on someone who's easily had their best years well behind them.
A vanity signing. That's what he'd be.
It's a vanity signing, yeah, it is. I think it's exactly what we said before. It's a Rooney, it's an Eto, it's a Gazza, Ginola, whatever you want to. Any of those names, it's another one of those if we end up doing this, and it's symbolic of the eras that those players were signed in as well, eras where we underachieved. I don't think it's a good move at all.
No.
So there you have it. I think we've all kind of agreed that we shouldn't sign Thiago Silva there. I think that seems pretty unanimous. For you podcast listeners, now it's time for the middle bit where we give ourselves a much-needed break from talking about Everton and discuss something a bit off-topic. But instead, the Everton squad are going to take centre stage for the middle bit this week. On a day where the Premier League has suggested that there could be walk-on music for substitutes. I mean, whatever you make of that, I'll let you guys decide at home. But during this fanless phase, they've considered this idea of walk-on music for substitutes. And with that in mind, we're going to discuss the best wrestling walkout music for members of the Everton first team. We'll try and work our way through most of the first team squad and look at the best tunes, most suitable tunes for each of our lads to walk out to. So we'll start with our number one, Jordan Pickford, shall we? A devout fan of rave music, as we know. Shouldn't be too hard to find something for him, surely. Teddy, I'll ask you first, seeing as you suggested this little discussion to me. So what about you? We'll go with you first. Teddy, what are you going with for Jordan Pickford?
Trying to think of a good... I hadn't thought of one for Pickford. I've got a couple like lined up, but I think for Pickford, you'd have to pick something like Shattered Dreams for Gold Dust, just because... I don't know why. Just look at him and he just says Gold Dust to me. Like, yeah. Honestly, I've got other ones for better players, but Pickford, nothing springs out. I don't think he's playing well enough to merit a good opening music. So just the joke of the roster, I think, would be Pickford.
What a suggestion for Pickford. I've actually, the last couple of weeks, I've had a bit of classic WWE, WF on me. I've got the network, so I've been watching a little bit of it. Pickford, do you remember Crash Holly? Hardcore champion, calling him Elroy Jackson because he was this little swear who thinks he's something great and he just gets beaten by all the big guys. Type thing. little Jack Russell, fiery guy, but out of his depth when he takes on the big boys.
That's well better.
Crash Holly's music when he come out with the hardcore title and he just run around causing trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I've had one in mind as well because, oddly enough, I was working out and I had this song on while I was doing my workout before, and I can just picture, like, it's a very bouncy song and a very, like, and it's a bit of a rave song. And I can just imagine Jordan Pickford loving this song, and I'm going to go with The Prodigy and Firestarter. I don't know why, I can just envisage Jordan Pickford loves that song.
Yeah, it's proper old school, isn't it? And I can imagine.
Old 90s rave.
But it's not a wrestling song, that though, is it? Like, it's not a wrestling theme song.
I didn't know it had to be a wrestling theme song. I just thought it was walkout music.
Well, it's not, but we you suggested having wrestling songs, and let's be honest, that's if no one has a wrestling song, they're missing a trick. Got to.
I don't even know what the wrestling songs are. I'm not a wrestling fan. I just thought it was walkout music, like the Out of the Crucible for the snooker.
Oh, that's all right. Like, I suppose that's good as well, but I think the wrestling music, if I mean, there's nothing down for you if you're picking wrestling from today because it's awful, but the 90s wrestling when it was off its head, it's got to be.
I'm not as clued up as you think on 90s wrestling.
Oh, you should be. It was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. You could go for like you could go for classic Everton players like Tim Howard or Landon Donovan, and they come out to Real American by Hulk Hogan.
Oh my god.
What else? There's Andre Gomez or Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He could be Val Venus, Hello Ladies.
Oh my god.
I put one on Twitter earlier on of Umani Ash coming onto Stone Cold Steve Austin's music.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Honestly, that people will, you know, the place will erupt with all the, even with the empty stands, the place will erupt when the glass shatters and Umar Nias comes off the bench to score a winner.
Oh my god, imagine if Nias scored a winner in the derby.
Don't.
So it's such a stupid fantasy. You know,
it's not even worth, but it's not even worth thinking about that, is it?
Everyone's got these end of the world checklists for 2020. You know, you've had like, you know, the bushfires, you know, the pandemic and all that. I think Nias scoring a derby winner is the most far-fetched of all those things.
Honestly. Go ahead, then we'll move on through the rest of the team. What about Mason Holgate?
Me?
Go ahead, Paul.
Don't know. D'Lo Brown? You're looking at the real deal. You're looking at the real deal now. And then it was like this crazy, like, sort of beatbox tune. And he'd come in, like, his shoulders bouncing, like, all chest puffed out type thing.
What about you, Teddy?
Who's have Shawn Michaels' music? Sexy boy. I've already used Andre Gomez for Val Venus and Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Luca Dean, he's a pretty boy, isn't he?
Yeah, I suppose. I don't think I can go down the squad list like that. Some of them don't mend themselves, but some of them just definitely do. Who else?
Go ahead then. Throw us a few there our way and see. You see, you got me as an idea when you're thinking of this concept. So go ahead.
Yeah, well, I've threw a few already. Have you got any more, Paul? Any
spring to the Charleston with the Rocks music? Because you can picture him going like that, can't you?
Well, this segment isn't filmed, so that what Paul just did then was smelt what the Rock was cooking. Now the Rock used to.
Yeah, when the Rock would wear the sunglasses and kind of turn his head to the side and like whiff like that. You know what I mean? What
Bobby
else?
Probably in Telford to have John Cena's music because everyone used to groan when that came on as well. No one liked to hear it. Everyone hated him in the end. I think that's what he'd have. It's just like, it's Fabian Delph. You're meant to like him, but nobody does.
Who else have we got? Tom Davis has been.
Oh, God.
Oh, Gilbert.
John Cena music, mate, because there's a lot of people who just love him and think he can't do anything wrong, and there's a lot of people who hate him and he can't do anything right.
Half the audience love him and half the audience hate him. Yeah, he'd have Bret Hart's music as well.
Bret Hart's music? What was that? That was like a guitar theme, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of who else. Who haven't we done? What would Jerry Meaners be? Mark Henry's? not saying why out loud, you'll have to just figure that out yourselves.
Yeah, I don't think that was the best joke to make in the current climate. I came from you, to be honest.
Moise Keane can have the Godfathers.
Yeah, because he got done, didn't he, with all the strippers.
James, we'll explain this to you off camera, mate.
Oh, God. Oh, I had someone in my head then, and it's left.
Sorry.
Theo Walcott. Theo Walcott would come into something quite, I think, sort of smooth. Smooth and jazzy.
I think so. I could always imagine him as like, as like the corporation music, a little snitch.
No, that'd be fun. Walcott's one of them. He's too nice for his own good, Walcott. No, I don't think he's snidey. I think he's the opposite. I think he's too honest.
Farhad Moshiri is of Shane McMahon's, wouldn't he? Here comes the money.
Here comes the money.
I think we've done it. I can't think of any more. I don't know about you. I think I've exhausted this idea.
We got our wires crossed a bit when we first started this discussion. I thought it was going to be a completely like sort of like kind of like snooker walkouts where it's just like you have an actual normal pop song. I didn't know we actually have songs by wrestlers.
Oh, Ken Wright's speak. That's a good one.
Ken Wright's speak.
He probably wanted to be Ric Flair's, wouldn't he? But it's not going to be that. Not on my watch.
Yeah. Compared to that, coming out to the music with his robe on, thinking everyone's in love with him. It's like, mate, just get off, you're embarrassing.
Well, he went missing for a while, didn't he? And then when, you know, came back out of nowhere, so he'd have Eric Bischoff's music, the I'm back. Anyway, I'm wrapping this up.
Yeah, well,
this was a bit of a random ass discussion, this, wasn't it?
That's the middle bit for you, isn't it?
It's certainly one of the more interesting ones we've done for a while, so I don't think anyone's going to argue with it.
No.
So yeah, we'll wrap it up there and we'll move on to our next segment. We're going to do a match preview for the Merseyside Derby. Welcome to the long-awaited return of the match preview segment. In case you haven't noticed, after 3 months off, the Premier League is back and Everton are back on Sunday night with the small matter of a Merseyside Derby against our old friends from across the park. To preview with me, I've got Tom and Max. We're going to do our best to not get depressed over the prospect of our most dreaded fixture of the English calendar. So, yeah, how are you doing, lads?
Doing very well, mate. How about you?
Yeah, pretty solid, with the exception of the obvious trepidation of playing that lot.
So, as you rightly said, at least circumstances aren't as first feared, at least Manchester City got the business done last night with quite some.
Absolutely. Now, in case you were living under a rock last night on Everton Twitter, now thankfully you might have heard that Man City got a 3-0 win over Arsenal, which means that lot can't win the title by beating us at Goodison, which I'm sure we're all breathing a massive sigh of relief over. It'll probably make the incoming inevitable heartache a little less painful. But nonetheless, what can we expect going into this game? Obviously, neither side's played for 3 months. Is it a bit more of an unknown quantity because of that thing? What about you, Tom?
Yeah, I suppose so. I was saying this yesterday with Max about the way Liverpool have had a friendly against another team. Everton have gone into this on the back of an intra-squad friendly, which we've seen highlights of on YouTube, of course. But we've not had a friendly with another club, and I reckon that puts us at a disadvantage. After watching Arsenal City last night, I thought Arsenal, at the start, looked a little bit sharper because they'd had a friendly. I know they got outplayed in the end because David Luiz absolutely messed it up for them. But I think it does give you a bit of an edge if you've had a friendly against another club. You'd have to step ahead. Yeah, it's a bit of pre-season, I suppose, at least. But no, I'd say we're at a bit of a disadvantage in that way to Liverpool, and that makes me even more nervous, to be honest. But yeah, I'm not feeling good for this one. I'm absolutely terrified that the lack of crowd is going to make it into a training game, and they are just going to hit goal after goal against us, and we'd just be helpless, to be honest. But that's a negative, pessimistic approach, I suppose. I hope you lads are more positive than I am.
Do you want the God's honest truth? I'm even more pessimistic than you, because I've been saying this regularly on some of the shows I've been doing lately, and it's just my concern about this Everton squad is that I don't think our players are professionally motivated. I feel like we need the fans to help us kick on and maybe go up a gear. Can you tell me whether you think Morgan Schneiderlin or Gylfi Sigurdsson is motivating themselves to kick on to the next level? Because the performances suggest otherwise, and that was with the fans. So, you know, I'm a little bit nervous because I'm not sure how committed to playing for Everton these players are. Some of them without having the fans maybe kicking them on, to like, or getting on the backs even and making them work a bit harder. It's just I'm not too sure whether they've got it in them to motivate themselves, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. Max, are you a bit more optimistic?
I mean, you've set me up to fail there, mate. But I just thought that's a roundly shared perspective that you've got there, and I think it's been a point of contention for several years now. I'd say going on 4 or 5 years. Does this group of players, on an individual subjective basis, understand what it means to play for Everton Football Club? Like, for example, I was speaking to Kevin Ratcliffe a few weeks back, and he said, you know, now it very much seems like players coming into the football club are joining Everton in the Premier League, and that's their motivation.
I agree with that 100%.
To play at the, you know, the most commercially lucrative and exposed to a media extent league in the world. Now, I was going to say, I do think for the viewers at home and those that are also watching this video, that you've quite possibly come to the worst possible three to get a match preview from, given the fact that we're all relatively young and we've endured some, you know, some absolute
depressions
over the years.
Merseyside derby experience.
Yeah, most definitely. But, you know, we know the script for this. We know the script. We haven't won a derby in 10 years. I remember it well. I was there, Tim Cahill and Mikel Arteta getting on the score sheet. And I think this is something like the 236th Merseyside derby. We've only got 66 wins out of that. Now,
well, yeah, that means it's 36 games since the 200th was the one where Carsley scored the winner. So they are 36 derbies, and since then we've only won 4 of them, I think.
I know, it doesn't make for very pleasant reading, but if you're looking for some sort of a constructive analysis of this, you know, you've got to look at the unique opportunity that it is. Like we say, of all games to be coming back to into the most obscure circumstances, to be playing a Merseyside derby really is quite interesting, especially from a neutral perspective, I'd say. I mean, yes, we often go into these games void of much confidence, but I would like to think, especially with the likes of that pressure being off, with Manchester City getting a result last night, we can go into this game and look to express ourselves. As I said, like, we know the script. We're coming under this very underhanded. We've got several injuries. Like, Walcott's out. Mina is a doubt. Delphi the doubt. Jibaman, as usual, is out. Andre Gomez, I know, is in training now, as I watched the most recent training video that the club put up on YouTube. And Gomez looks in the full swing of thing there. But, you know, in a Goodison Park without the fans there, as you say, it may very much play to our disadvantage, but I would urge the fans to, you know, observe these guidelines that are put in place to stay at home and to watch the game. You know, me and Tom were having the debate yesterday over this sort of perspective, or perception, I should say, of scouters in relation to football, and, you know, the fact that there was reservations about throwing a parade for Liverpool if they do win the title, and whether or not the derby would actually be hosted at Goodison. And right, as Tom rightly said yesterday in the podcast that we did, that this isn't the 80s anymore. The age of football hooliganism is well past, and this does provide a very unique viewing experience. I know the club, as usual, are firing on all cylinders with their social medias, and I believe there's something like a YouTube match day programme that's coming out, which is going to be really quite interesting. But, you know, do I want to win? Yes. Can I see a win? That's an entirely different question.
Yeah, I think we all know what the answer is as well. Tom, what about you, mate? Would you say it's a bit of a blessing in disguise as well. I think the whole having it back at Goodison with no fans, you know, it's a hard place, Goodison, if things do go wrong, you know, the, could we see maybe a more relaxed Everton, and could that maybe be, make us a bit more composed against a side who like to harry you? What do you think, Tom?
I was thinking that as well, the way some players might benefit from it, the likes of Tom Davis, the players you do get it down their ear, essentially, when they make a mistake. They won't have that anymore. I think the some of our players, as you were saying before, the likes of Schneider and Sigurdsson kind of do need it down their ear to wake them up sometimes and get them into the game. So some players will suffer from the lack of fans, but players like Tom Davis might benefit from the lack of crowd, be able to get some form together rather than having it down their ear the whole time. And I suppose it is less pressure in a way, but Carlo Ancelotti had just been trying to make Goodison into a fortress, and he's got a good home record since he's come in. And it's not the same. I was saying this yesterday, the way it's a home game, but it's not really, is it? Because you haven't got the 12th man. It's just, it's a football pitch. And I know the seats are blue. What difference does that make? It doesn't make much of a difference. The only one I can think of is geographically, but we're playing Liverpool. It's not like they'd have to travel very far. So, it's not really home advantage, but I hope that some of the players like Tom Davis and some of the younger players, well, Anthony Gordon maybe, another crowd will get behind him, but some players will feel less pressure and be able to perform better. And I suppose young players like Gordon will hopefully benefit from that.
Yeah, I think when I said what I said before, I was pretty much referring indirectly to Tom Davis, who is a lad who has been known to get a bit of stick, but I think this could be best opportunity you could have wished for, Tom Davis, given the situation with the injuries and maybe the lack of fans on his back. I think this is probably the big moment that he needs if he's going to make that big step up and as a first team regular. He's got to do it in these next 9 games, I think. But looking back particularly to the derby, what sort of setup can we expect? Obviously, we're a bit of a depleted side at the moment, aren't we? We're missing a lot of first team players, but can we expect to see any maybe young lads get a go? Obviously, it's down to circumstance more than anything else, but do you reckon we might see a few?
Anthony Gordon, and as we're saying, I think he's going to be hopefully getting a game. He showed some promise in the video. Certainly the video we saw of the inter-squad training match, he looked quite promising. So I think he'll get some minutes, especially with the 5 subs as well. You've got much more rotation, and I think it's going to benefit the bigger clubs because they've got, see Arsenal City yesterday, their benches were ridiculous. And the smaller clubs don't have the same effect because they don't have the squad depth in some cases. And I think, unfortunately, that I'd probably have to put us in that category at the moment. We have squad depth, but not quality. So we will be bringing some of the younger lads on. The likes of possibly even players like Jared Branthwaite at the moment. We've got a little bit of problems at centre-back with Yerry Mina still struggling. So I can see Jared Branthwaite getting a chance on the bench. So maybe you might make an appearance at some stage because you've got Holgate and Michael Keane with those spots at the moment. But obviously they'll need backup with games every 2 or 3 days. So I can see him getting a chance. Apart from those two, Benny Beningame has been thereabouts. Dennis Adoniran was involved in that match. Not sure how much we'll see of those because we have got good numbers in centre midfield. It's not necessarily quality, but we've got numbers, and no doubt we'll see pretty much all of the squad. If we're playing games every 3 days with 5 subs, I do think we're going to see the majority of the first team squad, and maybe that'll include the likes of Cuco Martin and Umar Nias, you never know. Oh, but God, it is going to be a lot of rotation, so we will see some fringe players getting a chance.
It's insane. I mean, To think that we might actually see Cuco Martino play for Everton again is like insane. It's bear thinking about, really. Well, let's just hope it's not in the derby, because I don't think we can stomach that. But I think it's such an unknown situation, obviously, that we're going into with the sort of setup. But with the way Liverpool play, do you think that maybe like the sort of they're quite a high pressing team. Do you think maybe having that bit more composure on the ball could like help us out a bit?
I was 100% yes, I'd agree. But at the same time, I feel like it is worth raising the point that whilst big media outlets have been whisked up in this narrative of Liverpool potentially winning the league at Goodison Park, Now that's kind of been stripped bare, and it remains the fact that, you know, out of the games that they've played this season, most recently, they've been on their biggest downturn of form. I think they've lost 4 of the last 6 games in all competitions. And I had someone have a swing at me for that last night on Twitter because I brought that point up. Because
someone will definitely have responded with that, haha, time for Everton meme or something.
But on a technical basis, there's no shadow of a doubt, yes, Liverpool individually and collectively are a much better side. But as we've seen from the games that took place yesterday, there's just a unique difference to them. And I would go as far as to say they're even more so different than pre-season games. In that there was, you know, a high volume of injuries. The game seemed to be played.
Arsenal had like 3 injuries, didn't they?
Yeah, and the game seemed to be played at a much slower pace. Players didn't seem to be covering as much ground. Now Liverpool have become notorious, as you say, James, for that
high tempo.
You know, relentlessness and failure to let you breathe on the ball. The optimist in me would like to think that, given such a long layoff, 100 days, 101 days, or, you know, it'll be a few more than that now when it gets to Sunday. But you'd like to think when it comes down to it, it might be quite a bit of a shock to the system. Yes, I know they played Blackburn at Anfield and they won 6-0.
Oh, God.
But I'm hoping that if we tactically are astute enough, and like we seen with that game yesterday, I noticed in there, when I was watching Villa, that there'd be water breaks, say, every 15-20 minutes. And who better would you want to go back and listen to than Carlo Ancelotti? You know, a man who's very, very intelligent and has been in and around big games.
Very, very assured manager.
Exactly. So you'd like to think with that pressure of a crowd baying for blood off, that players can remain composed, level-headed, and take in information from Ancelotti and use it properly and play their roles to a T on Sunday evening.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is, like you say, with those 20-minute breaks, every 20 minutes we get a chance to maybe regroup if things aren't going well and maybe change the system. And sort of, it's not often a normal circumstance, you get a manager, wouldn't you, who would be shouting an instruction to one player who'd be passing it on to the others. And it's not often you get a chance for the whole team to sort of regroup, almost like a timeout in like basketball or something. You don't really get that in football. So this might be a circumstance that could help, especially a side who might be on the defensive side of things, let's say. I think it's safe to say, I think we'll be doing a lot of defending. So,
but it might be like a boxer going back in between rounds to his corner after getting the shit beaten out of him for the last round. Who knows? It remains to be seen. But We'll see. I'm not confident, but I haven't been given any evidence to prove me otherwise, really.
Well, I don't think we haven't been given any evidence for 10 years, have we, really? I mean, but going into this game, it seems like the whole world is against us, but with the whole injury situation, plus obviously the, like you say, the golfing quality as well. But I think you mentioned it briefly earlier on, didn't you? Could the fact that the pressure of them not winning the league at Goodison if they win, do you think that might give our players a little bit of a boost? Like maybe just a little, maybe not even a morale boost, just maybe a bit of a good omen. It's just like,
I think it'd certainly give them a relief in a sense, you know. Of course, because was that running narrative of them losing the league last season of Goodison. I'm sure if Manchester City did slip up last night, that Liverpool would, you know, 100% be on the ball coming into this game, which may leave us a bit trepid. But I'd say I don't know if it be viewed as a positive motivation, as we've got nothing to play for ourselves, and I don't think you should draw any sort of positive inference from the fact that our main rivals are doing so well. But it might just be key, that relief of, okay, if they do get 3 points, yeah, it, you know, that's not going to be them. That's not going to be them immortalised for winning the league at Goodison.
Yeah, that's
hopefully.
That's something. And I think for us as fans, that's what matters the most. Is that like, regardless of what happens on Sunday, we won't have to deal with that. And I think I'm one of them. I'll admit that they're the best team and that they've earned the title, but I would never have lived it down. I just did not want that to happen under any circumstances. And thankfully, we've learned that maybe we aren't completely despised by the football gods. Yeah, I just think it's going to be a chastening experience. It always is, the Merseyside derby, but you never know. We could spring a surprise. We'll finish off then. We're going to go with let's have a little score prediction.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Go ahead, Max. What do you think?
I don't know. I'll lend me optimist for this one. I'll say it'll be a 2-2 draw.
Tom?
I don't think we'll score. I'm very ambitious to have a score. I said 0-0 yesterday, so I stick with that. But that's not a prediction. That's more of a
pipe dream
ambition, I suppose. It's very ambitious prediction. If I was going to give a realistic one, it would be about... I was saying yesterday about my dream. Yeah, the nightmare that it was going to be a training game for Liverpool and they were just going to score, jog back to the centre circle, score again, jog back to the centre circle. It will be about 8-10-0, but that's not my prediction. I'll say 0-0, hopefully, but that's fingers crossed.
I think I'll try and be optimistic as well. Then I'll go firmly down the middle between you there and I'll go with 1-1.
Huh.
I think it's one of them. I mean, normally I'd be optimistic that we can get at least a draw at Goodison. But without the fans, it's just a bit of an unknown quantity. And I think we noticed yesterday with the City game, and I think the sides who were better on paper seem to do better in these behind closed doors fixtures just because the fans aren't there to sort of balance, project the balance, if you know what I mean. So it is a bit daunting, but nonetheless, we've got no choice. We've got to suck it up, and it's coming up in a couple of days' time. Get it out the way, and then hopefully we can move forward and do match previews like this with a bit more optimism for the games that are left after that.
I know. Just get us out of 12th place, mate. That feels horrible to say that.
Depressing, isn't it?
Just top half. Anything top half. Just as long as not in that graphic at the bottom of the table with the likes of bloody Norwich and all that. Just as long as we're in the top half of the table, that's fine. I'll push towards Europe if we can. I doubt there's a chance now, but top half, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think after the way we started the season, I think that'd be passable at this stage. But let's just get through the derby first and hopefully come away as unscathed as humanly possible. But if you're listening to the podcast, of course, it's time for us to round off with the If You Know Your History quiz. Tonight, it's McAllister versus McAllister. It's Teddy v. Paul. In another match day squad quiz. For those who haven't tuned in before, that basically means I'm going to name an Everton fixture from the past and our two competitors are going to reel off the members of the squad, be it a starter or a youth sub, and the first to get one wrong surrenders the win to his opponent. But first things first, we're going to decide who goes first. I'll let you pick, Paul, considering you haven't been on for a while. Flip a coin, heads or tails?
Tails.
Tails. It's sales, Paul. Do you want to go first or second, mate?
Come on, I'll go first.
Paul's going first. Right, now we've got all that sorted. I'll reveal the fixture in question. We'll cue the intense quiz music. How about that? Right, it's time to get depressed. I was at this game, and I can tell you it was one of the worst home games I've ever watched, and somehow we didn't get beat. The fixture for tonight's challenge is Everton 1, West Bromwich Albion 1. Premier League, 20th of January 2018. From the depths of the abyss that was the Sam Allardyce era, there was 11 starters and 3 youth subs. You've got 14 to choose from. Go ahead, Paul. You're up first, mate.
Oh, this game wasn't long ago and I don't remember it. I must have been there.
This game.
Yeah, it must just be one of those games that put out my brain, like most of the Allardyce era. I'm going to have to go easy and just say Pickford in goal.
Pickford was in goal. Teddy?
What was the date of the game again?
20th of January 2018.
Wayne Rooney?
Wayne Rooney was a used substitute.
Michael Keane at the back.
Teddy's worry. Michael Keane was an unused.
I don't remember the game at all. Really don't.
Michael, we'll carry on naming it.
We'll carry on naming it, and Teddy, you should get this one, to be honest.
Ashley Williams.
Ashley Williams did play, yeah. Played the full game.
Who else would have been there? If it was in January, then Sandro would have gone off on loan, wouldn't he?
There's no Sandro in the team, so you'd like to.
Yeah, no Sandro.
Serve him.
Yeah, I know Klassen didn't get a sniff. Would Sigurdsson have played?
Yeah, Sigurdsson played.
Sigurdsson was there.
Full game.
Cuco Martina.
Cuco Martina played.
Bainsey on the left?
Nope. Bainsey didn't play at all. I think he must have been injured because Cuco Martin is down as the left back.
Jesus Christ.
Back in the day. Lofty day, Martin at left back.
Mason Holgate on the right hand.
Mason Holgate did play full game.
Like I said, that's announced back to your guess.
Me,
because you tried to take my turn, but I said Holgate as you said it, so it's your turn again.
Well, you've already won anyway, so
Oh, you won. Teddy's won, hasn't he? Yeah,
Teddy won. I said Michael Keane, and you said he didn't play. Would John Joe Kenny have been on the right?
Kenny was the right back. Holgate played centre half with Williams.
Idrissa Gueye.
Idrissa Gueye was an unused sub. Strange.
What?
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it?
What madness?
But this is Allardyce we're talking about here. Like, this decision's always boggled everyone's minds.
Would Davis have played then?
Tom Davis wasn't even in the match day squad.
Christ, who's in the middle then?
Morgan Schneiderlin.
Morgan Schneiderlin played the full game.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin?
No sign of Calvert-Lewin in this matchday squad either.
Umanias?
Of course, Umanias played. This was that game, Terry, that the you put that video up of this morning. That's why I said you expect us to get this one. When you put a video up of it a couple of hours ago.
Well, I know Nias came on before then. It would have been Tosin, wouldn't it? He started.
Was Cheng Tosin who started and Nias replaced him and scored after a minute.
Theo Walcott.
Theo Walcott did play the full game. Who are we missing now? We've got three more, two more starters and one used sub.
Just trying to think of positions we haven't spoke about. Who would have played on the left?
I know played on the left, but it's not my turn.
Was it Gilfy? Because I know we were sticking Sigurdsson out there, weren't we?
It doesn't look like it.
No. I don't know. Do you want to say it then, Teddy?
Yannick Bolasie.
Yannick Bolasie was the substitute. He came on at half time. He's the final used sub, but he wasn't the guy who started on the left wing.
All right, because I in that clip I put up, I remember Bolasie being on a pitch.
Yeah, but well, the goal was after half time, and Bolasie was on, but he's the final used sub. You've got two more starters to get, and that's all that is left.
I think I've got one actually. Would have been Vlasic.
Vlasic was the one you were thinking of. Vlasic replaced Vlasic at half-time.
Yeah.
Okay. We've had the back four. We've had the keeper. We've had left. We've had right. We've had Sigurdsson, Schneiderlin, Nias. Davies wasn't there. Rooney came on. Garner wasn't used. Who was in the middle then?
Oh, I might have it actually. Was it Beningame?
No, Beningame in the squad.
No.
Was it Besic?
No Besic.
Thinking back though, what an absolute mess our squad was naming all these players.
I know, it was a joke, wasn't it?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm tapping out. I don't know.
He's given up.
I think we're looking for a midfielder, aren't we?
Yous are, yeah.
Yeah. Is this player still at the club now?
No, he isn't.
No, he's not. Who do we get rid of then? It's not Klassen, is it? Klassen didn't get a sniff.
Klassen was well and truly frozen out by this point, I think.
Yeah, Klassen was playing with the under-23s at this point, wasn't he?
I'll tell you, this player, this game's quite infamous for this.
Oh, James McCarthy.
Yeah, he broke his leg in this game.
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay.
I remember it now. Yeah, it was Rondon, wasn't it, from the Gladders?
Yeah, and Rooney came on in the 61st minute to replace him.
That was right in front of me, the Gladders, so no wonder I've put this game out of my brain.
Yeah. That, well, yeah, James McCarthy, that was his last start for the club, actually. It was pretty good in that. But yeah, like I said,
it was right in front of me when Rondon kicked his leg and you just heard the snap and it was like, oh.
I was in the upper Gladys for that. And obviously, I didn't see it properly because it was kind of through the goal, if you know what I mean, where it happened from me.
Yeah.
I just remember, like, everyone's, like, I just remember the people, like, probably where you were in the glass. You seen everyone, like, oh my God. Like, you just
see what happened. Yeah. It was like everyone took a breath, like, like that. It was just really, really horrible and grim. So, yes, I'm not surprised at myself now for just putting that game out of my memory. Because it was a grim game on top of everything. But McCarthy getting really gruesomely injured, like, that was just not nice at all.
No, it was, like I did say, it was a very, very depressing game, whatever way you looked at it. And but for Niasse's moments in the spotlight, I think it would have been one of the worst games I've ever recalled. Certainly games that have been the match, because it was bloody atrocious. I remember it all too well. And I think, like you, Paul, I'll do my very best to try and suppress it from now on. Yeah, so there you have it. That was the... all the starters and used subs. The unused subs were Joel Robles, Idris Aganagay, Phil Jagielka and Michael Keane. Right. So you win the quiz. Well, I say again, this is how long has it been since you last won the quiz, Terry?
Oh, since I was this high. It's been a while.
Well, you know, you better get looking for the song. You mustn't be used to this, but you'll have to pick out the song.
You're right, I'm not. I'm just having a little look now. I'm going to go with Gimme All Your Lovin' by ZZ Top.
Oof. Interesting.
Return to form for the
rock fans in the house.
Yeah. I've strayed from my usual theme the last time I won, and that, you know, got a lot of hate mail over it, and, you know, people unfollowing me on Twitter and everything and getting upset at me, so I've decided to return to form. Do what I'm good at, stick to it, don't try and change things up.
No. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, I wonder how many times he's already had this song.
Yeah, let's be honest.
It's been that long since you won the quiz, everyone will forgot that anyway.
I know. I mean, I have done that before. I was that a joke, but I literally had this song before. Because I have done
I
that.
I don't know. Maybe when no, Jerry you, was... I think when Jerry was... Shocked.
Yeah, I mean, I have got form for that. But I don't think I've had this one before. I have had ZZ Top before, but I don't think I've had this particular song. It's just a great song. And why that song? I mean, we're going to need all the loving this week, aren't we? Let's be honest. The nerves are going to be shot. In the Man City game, and then they're going to be even worse in the derby. They're going to need all the loving.
I don't want to break this to you, but I'm sure in the music video they're driving a big red car.
Oh, well. It's fine. It's not about Liverpool. Not everything's about Liverpool, regardless of what they say.
Yeah, to be fair, this is like the only place you can come to get, you know, anything that doesn't involve Liverpool, to be honest, because you know what usually is on the mainstream channels. So this is why you need to keep tuning in, guys. Definitely make sure you keep tuning in. And thank you again to Teddy and Paul for joining me again.
No worries.
And we'll finish off on Teddy's request with Gimme All Your Love by ZZ Top. We'll see you later.